Well, let's pretend like we know.
So cold outside or hot.
Or something.
It's lukewarm outside.
What weather is happening?
Right.
Cultural events. Can you believe it? Things have taken place.
How about that thing that happened?
It's yeah. Hard to believe.
Man, the president is doing some stuff. Am I right,
yeah,
everybody?
Yeah, that president. Right. Ooh, things are happening again.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
If you were confused by that intro.
So were we.
Yeah, well, we are pre-recording. We had to pre-record a few podcast episodes because yep. I am currently out on paternity leave.
Woo-hoo.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Right. Or did he hire a Strava mule for his to do his parenting?
Don't make jokes like that, because who knows when this
right,
episode comes out.
2 months
real...
old.
In relation to that reference. Yeah. But we are recording this back-to-back with that episode where we talked about Strava mules and open-handed Christianity.
Real time. It's very topical.
So it's been... Truly, this is coming out months later.
Yeah.
But maybe. Unless it isn't.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it could come tomorrow.
That would be early.
That would be very early.
That would be not
ideal. I'm not saying
ideal.
That's ideal. Yeah. I'm just saying it could.
Yeah, okay, okay, good. Yeah,
we don't need to stress out about that.
I'm not stressed.
So we are pre-recording a few episodes just so that Pastor David and Elise here don't have to record too many without me.
You're here.
Yes.
Especially in the Christmas season. That's my,
oh my
ho-ho.
When this presumably comes out. You know.
Sometime around
Merry
then.
Christmas, everybody.
Yeah. And Happy New Year and whatever.
All right. So we're going to jump right on in.
I think every intro for all of the pre-recorded episodes needs to be like this now. I think this
can
is
we just
our...
like rip this one and yeah, like put it back in for everything.
I love
sure
it.
Could. We
That's
sure
great.
Could.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna talk about school.
Okay.
Yeah.
School.
School may or may not be in or out of session. So
very relevant
when this comes out. Yes.
Yeah. We've all been to school.
We have. I've not been to school in London, and we're talking about a London school.
Ooh.
Okay.
A London
we're
school.
Talking about a private school, though, and I did go to private school.
So, yes. Ta-ta. Cheerio.
Ta-ta. I went to private school.
Yes. In London. Oxford and whatnot.
Yeah, I guess London private school, usually that's like, they're like going away to school too.
Boarding school.
Boarding school, yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of awesome, like, for everybody.
I do have a question.
Everybody wins.
In relating to London boarding school, Hogwarts, is that a public or private school?
It's private. It's by invitation only.
Gotta be private.
But you don't pay anything.
Who says you don't pay anything?
Harry doesn't pay a dime to go to Hogwarts.
I mean, you don't see the
Weasleys
bill.
Don't have any money. They're going to Hogwarts.
They have to pay for all their stuff.
Every school you have to pay for. You have to, you're still alive. You
it
pay
might
for
be subsidized.
Subsidized?
Yeah.
I think it's still private.
I mean, it's public for the wizarding community.
It's not, though.
Every wizarding community
that's,
kid
not
goes
every,
to that school.
It's by invitation. Not every wizard goes to that. That's why you have other wizarding schools like Durmstrang and whatever
but
the one is
aren't
down
in
this is the nerdiest
London.
Argument that we have had.
Ours is a charter school.
Right. That's ridiculous. Dumbledore would never align with charter schools.
Right? All right. UK's first teacherless AI classroom set to open in London.
No, I'm sorry.
I hate this.
They don't pay taxes in... Like, the wizards don't pay taxes. There can't be a publicly funded...
Oh, we're back on this.
Sorry. I'm just... I can't.
The school is
there's
free.
No there's no publicly funded school. That can't be it.
The school is free.
It's not, there's no evidence that it's free.
There's no evidence that it costs.
It's way more evidence that they pay for things.
There's no evidence.
All right, what do we got?
Harry never gets a bill.
It's one of those plot holes, probably, in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Of which there are many.
Right. That's the plot hole.
First teacherless AI-led school.
Okay. Led school? The entire school is led by AI?
I hate everything about this. It's from the jump.
I hate school. I hate London. Yeah. I hate AI.
I'm down on all of it.
It's taught by artificial intelligence instead of human teachers.
Okay. Well, that's...
Let's see what happens. Let's... Yeah. What grade level are we going for? Are we getting artificial intelligence to supervise my toddler? That could be...
Oh, my gosh.
They say the technology allows for precise, bespoke learning, while critics argue AI teaching will lead to a soulless, bleak future.
Yeah, I mean, I would... Yeah.
I think we're grossly overusing the term bespoke at this point.
Yeah,
I think we need to...
Bespoke AI. You get, like, bespoke shoes. Yeah. Right. Bespoke, bespoke...
I don't think we're education. Misusing soulless, bleak future.
No, yeah. That sounds... right
we should use that more.
In anything, we're underselling.
Right.
This. Yeah. So students will learn with a mixture of AI platforms on the computer and virtual reality headsets. So you put on your little headset, and the AI teacher appears.
Hello, student.
And teaches you what you need to know.
2 + 2 = whatever I tell you to.
Right, yeah. So I followed a little bit, like the Google's launch of its AI search feature.
Sure.
Which I don't know if you followed this as well, but it's been kind of a disaster because
at times, yeah.
AI learns from the internet, which is human driven, and there's all kinds of wrong information on the internet and wrong information that's put out there on purpose by people, and AI cannot distinguish between joking wrong information and correct information.
Does not get sarcasm, the AI. Yeah.
And I like the results, like search results of that. I've seen so many hilarious like screenshots of them. They're just like ridiculous search results. So like I would imagine that teacher AI would go in a similar direction to that, you know?
Yeah, I would like to think that teacher AI has some specific safeguards set in place to teach particular material, but I hear you. Yeah, there's definitely a danger here. I'm not advocating for this whatsoever. Right. Yeah, I think teachers are valuable and cannot be replaced by AI. In the same way, I think pastors are valuable and cannot be replaced by AI, I pray.
Your eyes are shifting around a little bit.
Or maybe we are AI right now. Right. Who knows? Maybe when the time this podcast comes out. You know.
We're all AI.
Yeah, everybody. Everything's AI.
Yeah. It happened in 8 weeks.
Right.
Yeah. No. All right, here's what the school's co-principal says, John Dalton.
Is this AI? Is he co with AI? Like,
right. Maybe. There are many excellent teachers out there, but we're all fallible.
Sure.
Sure.
No argument.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very difficult to achieve level of precision and accuracy and also that continuous evolution. And ultimately, if you know exactly where a child is not learning, I think the AI systems can pinpoint that more effectively.
Listen, I don't have a problem with AI supporting teachers in some capacity, but I do not agree with this guy that AI is going to do a better job of pinpointing a child's concerns than a teacher. Like,
interesting enough, he's not advocating for AI to replace his job.
Right.
I know, right? Like,
we still need a principal.
AI
right?
principal. Yeah.
Maybe AI could be a principal.
Yeah.
AI could take John Dalton's job.
I bet there are a lot of teachers who say, AI could do a better job of this.
Right.
Yeah. This, because I feel like, you know, in school, for myself personally, teaching the teaching-student relationship wasn't just about, like, education being passed from them to me, right? Like,
not just information.
Everybody has, like, a teacher that believed in them, that supported them, that had that right personality mix that you vibed with, and that was, like, an important central figure, hopefully. Hopefully you had that. Like, I think everybody who becomes successful in life did.
Yeah.
I think we all have to have that to get there, a mentor figure. And AI cannot be that.
Not yet. Yeah.
That you cannot say, like, this AI believes in me.
Yeah.
And this AI supported me when my family system was hard.
What was that Robin Williams film, though, where he...
Dead Poets Society.
No, not that one.
No.
Goodwill Hunting.
No, the one where he was a robot. Jumanji. The one where he was a robot. Flubber. It has to do with AI. Oh my goodness, you're all the worst.
Mark and Mindy. That's not a film, that was a TV show.
Oh no. Forget he was a robot?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was definitely a movie where Robin Williams played a robot.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
I think it's Mrs. Doubtfire.
All right. Number one, I am genuinely impressed with how many Robin Williams movies you all just like rattled off. That was better than I would have hoped for. But there is a movie where Robin Williams does this.
Toys.
And it, what?
That's a really bad movie.
Never mind. None of this matters. Move on. Something else.
Bicentennial Man is the name of the movie.
Was that it?
He plays a robot in it. I don't know if that's the only one.
Right?
That might actually be it. Yeah. But he does become like an emotional support thing for this broken family. Anyway, but that's future movie.
But it's also a movie.
Right, it's not reality. Yeah. AI in its current status cannot do that.
Oh. Yeah. By the way, this school costs £27,000 a year, which is...
That's kind of a lot of money.
27,000 pounds.
Presumably, I have no idea. Yeah. It's impossible to say.
That's 10.7 tons. That's a lot of pounds.
Is that accurate?
I mean, 2,000 pounds are a ton. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just whip that out.
A teacher doesn't really know your flaws.
I don't know how many pounds are in a British dollar, but
I got the kilometer one.
That was a long time ago.
In a different episode, he was like, I got this kilometer mile conversion.
A teacher doesn't really know your flaws because he has so many students. So he doesn't know your flaws, which the AI will
maybe we should
out.
Pay teachers more and give them fewer students.
Are,
I don't want my teachers to know my flaws. I want them to know my high points.
How can they help you learn? Or,
my
you know,
flaws
achieve
are
your
my
high
business.
That doesn't sound right.
Okay, so each classroom will have 3 learning coaches, which are professional educators.
So a real teacher
that are there to kind of help coach. And also
coach the AI or what?
Like, coach the students. And, okay. And they also teach things that the AI can't quite figure out. And they say that is art and sex ed.
That's amazing.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. We're going to need a minute. Whew. All right. You really buried the lead on that one, Patrick. All right. Yeah. What else we got?
I got some questions.
I don't want to hear
the
any
questions.
No.
I'll see what I can answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I get the former, how it doesn't, but the latter.
Can't do art.
You're right. How does it, what trips it up about?
Well, I think first we have to remember that it's happening in London and not the United States. I think in the United States, it could probably get its head around an abstinence-only sex ed class.
True, yeah.
London has a different understanding of what sexual education is supposed to involve. Right. So we don't need to go into detail, but yeah, we'll just leave it at that. London's education system is different.
Right. Don't even go to Germany.
back to Hogwarts. I presume they did not teach these things at Hogwarts. I mean, that was a
There's no evidence they had math class. Why would they have? Yeah.
I don't know if Dumbledore teaches a sexual education class in Hogwarts.
And
yeah, there's a lot of jokes that can be made here that we will not.
Will we not?
We will not. Elise is going to need a minute.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. The problem with AI and the computer. This is another quote from another person here. Screen that it's a machine and it's inert. And if you're straight away dehumanizing the process of learning, taking away those interpersonal skills and the interaction between pupils and teacher. Da-doy.
Like right, obviously.
Yeah. I don't need an AI to even teach me that.
That's right. I knew that one. Yeah.
It's a soulless, bleak future if it's going to be along the AI path.
It's good to know that we could have been quoted as AI experts in this article. Yeah. Oh yeah, I can say that.
Yeah, they could have called me up. Do you think this is a good idea? And I was like,
nope,
absolutely
no,
not.
No.
It's a soulless, bleak future.
Right. No. Yeah.
You know, by comparison, I would rather have learned sex ed from a computer than my mom. Would have been much less embarrassing.
Interesting. Okay, moving right along.
I was homeschooled.
Yeah, no, I don't like this. I would definitely not be sending my children to a private school.
Not for £27,000.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, AI it's here to stay. Like, we all agree. Like, it's kind of, it's here. It's not going anywhere. I've used ChatGPT before, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But I do not want my computer teaching my children how to be children and how to be, mm-hmm. you know.
Nah.
Yeah. And I think teachers are not just giving information. Again, you're navigating how interpersonal relationships, and that's part of this process. I don't want...
Yeah.
I think my computer do a great job of teaching a computer how to do a computer things, but my kids are not computers, so I'm anti.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I didn't know we had to say it, but sure. I'm against it too.
We did in our Bible rating episode. No thumbs, by the way. Zero thumbs.
Zero thumbs.
No thumbs to class. No thumbs to AI. No thumbs to London.
I hold out a potential thumb for London.
I actually like London.
I haven't been, so I'd hold out an option.
Okay, there you go. Let's get to our main topic.
Okay.
Four lessons from
Feels like we talked about that one for a long time.
It does, yeah.
We did.
30 minutes.
Four lessons from the early church that could fix the modern church.
Oh,
okay. Let's hear them. BuzzFeed list.
By Preston Sprinkle.
I'm sorry, what?
Preston Sprinkle.
Sprinkle.
Preston Sprinkle. You heard it here. You know.
Sprinkle like the like on a cupcake. Okay. Preston Sprinkle.
Preston Sprinkle. Yep.
All right. Can we all agree that sounds like somebody's like dancer name? Like that's
a drag name?
Yeah. Or something. Yeah. Yeah. This is not.
Maybe AI wrote this. I don't know. Yeah.
This poor person.
Preston
I don't
Sprinkle.
Know. If this is
yeah.
a
it's
man
a guy.
Or woman. Yeah.
I've heard him on a podcast before.
Oh.
Oh, okay. you know Preston.
A return
well,
fan
I know of
Preston Sprinkle.
Yeah. I didn't say, you know, I've heard him on a podcast. So there you go.
Still could be AI. Yeah.
Still could be. Yeah. Maybe we're AI. Maybe I'm AI.
Right.
Did I just become self-aware? All right. He starts, I often hear Christians say we should be more like the early church.
Woo.
Okay.
What do we think? Yes or no?
Sometimes. Some aspects of the early church we should be better at.
There are things we should learn from the early church. Yeah. Yes. But.
There's kind of a lot of like martyrdom and stuff happening during that time period. So it's a pass for me.
I don't think that's necessarily the early church's fault. And like, it's not like the early church was like, you know what we really need to do? We need to focus on getting martyred. Right. Like, yeah. That wasn't like the
drive. Like their weekly meeting. They're like, all right.
Who's up? That's right.
Yeah.
Paul, any progress?
That's right. We
is that your early church accent?
Yes, yeah.
It's,
Paul?
It's old white guy. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, it's fine.
Obviously, the early church was all white guys.
They were definitely old because, yeah. You know, 2,000 years ago.
Right. So. Touche.
All right. Yeah. I think we should learn from the early church.
Yes.
But the modern church should not look exactly like the early church.
No.
Yeah. But there are things that we can learn
yes.
from it.
All right.
And so he's got four things we can learn from it. And we'll see if there's anything we would maybe say. Maybe these are things we don't want to learn from the early church. That
maybe.
We to say yeah. Like, that the early church did for their, that made sense for them.
Yeah.
But it would not make
let's
sense.
Let's see what Mr. Sprinkle recommends and we can argue about it.
I'm going to interject a thought here real quick.
Uh-oh.
That I actually think that because the context of Christianity has flip-flopped so much since then, where we are kind of the cultural
yes.
powerhouse now, I think that maybe we should spend more time figuring out what we can learn from like the occupying Roman Empire at the time.
Sure.
And like their religious practices. And we never do that. And I sometimes wonder.
Wait, hold
not,
a second.
Not learn like positively, but like. No, like.
I need some clarification.
Yes. So I love the Roman Empire.
We need to bring back sacrifices to Zeus.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is we should think about Rome more often.
Yes. You guys already think about Rome all the time.
More Rome.
Right.
I'm on it. Yeah. Got it.
No, like what was harmful about like. The way that like an occupying religious powerhouse operates.
Oh,
like,
we should be aware of what was
we
harmful.
We should be aware of that,
and we should
spend more time thinking and examining those things.
I agree.
That became more clear as you talked. That's good. Yeah,
thank
good
you.
Job.
Yeah, it was very clear in my head when I started.
Yeah, sure.
We got
you
there.
Led us through the fog. We all got there. Yeah.
All right, number one.
Pat, did you get a new fancy little phone stand here?
No, I've always
the that's the Bible.
But yeah, I haven't seen him prop his phone up like this before. I'm aware that this is
this little doohickey over there.
Yeah, it's very handy.
Great for watching TV on my phone while I do dishes.
Yeah, so, or like hands-free podcasting. This is great.
Yeah. How we view other Christians.
All right, step one. We should learn from the early church about how we view other Christians.
Yeah.
What does the early church teach us about how we view other Christians?
Well.
Or what does Mr. Sprinkle say?
What is Mr. Sprinkle's interpretation of the early church?
Mr. Sprinkle.
Mr. Sprinkle sounds like an Instagram famous Pomeranian. This poor guy.
That is true. I can see a little Pomeranian, a little bow in the hair. This is Preston Sprinkle.
Preston Sprinkle's had a great day today with some walkies to the park.
Mr. Sprinkle, I'm sorry. You don't deserve this. I'm sure you're a lovely human being. But man, your name. All right. So what should we, how should we be treating other people?
One comfortable value trumpeted by the early Christians was their view of church as family. The first Christians saw themselves as brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers to everyone who is part of the Christian community. Mm-hmm. All right. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think that, I saw a funny video the other day. Where it was from Christians Who Curse Sometimes, which is on Instagram. And they put it up and it's like, my church is different. And then it says, also me. And it goes through like 15 clips of different churches all saying, hey, church family, hey, so-and-so family.
Yeah. Similar one of like, we do life together.
Right,
we
yeah.
do life together. Yeah. We do life together.
Yeah. So I think there are ways where, yes, we should think about this more practically, but I also think there are ways in which we like, abuse the language of it without actually putting into practice.
I think that's yes. the thing here. I think we say this, but we don't actually do it.
Yeah.
Like
it's not enough to just be like, oh, Brother Patrick, Sister Elise. Like, no. You actually gotta like treat one another like family.
Well,
which is why we get in little fights every so often.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, where else can you be your worst self except with your family and trust that they are still going to love you at the end of that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the early church, their family. Their actual how they viewed family was different than how Christians viewed in America. I mean, it was an extended family, potentially all living in one roof or one property, where it would not be uncommon to have grandmother, grandfather, aunts, uncles, cousins, all living together. And here,
all sick in one bed, like William the Walker
horrible.
Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. Well, and then, I was born at the right time.
Well, then I mean, America kind of came on with the new concept of the nuclear family.
That's right.
Parents and
grandma,
kids,
grandpa, get out of here.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the family system, mm-hmm. and that's the only one that matters. And what people don't ever realize is like, eventually you graduate out of that family system,
yeah.
and then like you're kicked to the side for the new family system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're like, well, I don't like that. I liked it when I was part of the family system, yeah. but you know that's.
Family values, man.
Family values, yeah.
Traditional.
But I think, you know, that is a different way to kind of experience kind
yes.
of how we look at the church community.
Yep.
So for here, you know, and I think this is, again, it's valuable of where do you find your place in the church? Sometimes now we break it up by gender. Mm-hmm. Gender.
Gender.
that's
the land of gender.
the sorting hats.
The fourth moon of gender.
At the public school Hogwarts. that's, divide you by gender.
Yeah. It's going to be gender.
Griffin gender. gender or age are typically, you know, how we divide people
yeah,
up, right?
Sure.
Like that's kind of your new system. And so, yeah, the other church didn't do that, you know,
yeah.
maybe by gender, but you know, like
a little,
yeah. I mean,
but they didn't
confirmed.
But the idea of like we're all one family unit within this church body in this one city,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of how they viewed one another.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of start. Again, don't just say that from the pulpit. On how you greet people, but start living it out is much more challenging, much more complicated.
Yeah, yeah. And it does have those relational components, right? Yeah. So it is a place where we have hard conversations with mm-hmm. one another, and we still love one another. It's a place where we eat together. It's a place where we sometimes say, like, "Man, this is not. I'm not sure if I can stay here." And like, what's that mean for us to have to leave our family, right? I mean, mm-hmm. all of those things factor into church being family. I think we can learn more from that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Number two, how we spend our money.
Yes. To an extent, there are things about how the early church spent their money that we can learn about.
He has to be pro-tithe. It's really awkward if you're not pro-tithe.
Well, the early church is pro-tithe.
Yeah.
But again,
the early church is like everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you like, especially the early church, beginning
right.
of Acts, it's they held
very,
everything
like, communal.
In common, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
you know, there are two people who die because they lie about not actually giving everything. Like, they say they give everything, but they held something back, and Peter's
yeah.
like, boom, you dead.
Yeah.
And then the wife comes in and she lies again, and boom, you dead too, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think we need to go to that extent. We do not live in a society in which it is practical or feasible for us to give everything that we have to one communal space and then that's just not how our society economy functions. But I do think that we can learn something valuable about, hey, they were putting the church and their faith before monetary possessions. Like there's mm-hmm. a way in which they interact with money that I think yeah. is valuable for us to learn from.
This is so interesting to me because so many of these things, if they were happening today, like not in our particular sphere of influence, we'd be like, oh, that's a cult. We need to stage an intervention for these poor people. You know,
sure.
like it's very
sure.
interesting to kind of interact with that
sure.
a little
yeah.
bit for me.
Because now we're in power. And
right.
And then they were small. So,
yeah.
yeah, I mean, obviously, and he's going to talk about this, like church today looks very different. You know,
mm-hmm.
them
yeah.
is going to be a home church. Who's the pastor? Nobody. You
yeah.
know, like,
right.
or
maybe the person whose home it's in, like, leads that service. Yeah.
Not a paid pastor.
Yeah.
There's not somebody whose, like, job is to be the pastor. There
yep.
might be a spiritual leader, but
mm-hmm.
they're not. They don't have a mortgage. They don't have a building
mm-hmm.
for their church. They
mm-hmm.
don't have staff. There's not. This is the secretary. This is the worship leader. This is the youth director.
Yep.
They don't have those things. So any money that they're giving is not going to any of those things.
Yeah.
It's going directly to helping the poor
yeah.
and the people in their community. And again, I think that there could be a lot to learn about that,
mm-hmm.
of like that churches can do a better job of giving directly to the poor, helping those in the community
sure.
and things like that. I think this is one of those that I would say, like, if we want to say our church should learn from the early church, this is like, we need to destroy our church. This is not like a learn.
Yeah.
This is a
rebuild.
Tear down.
Yeah.
yeah, this is, it's all got to go away. Because there is no way to kind of reconcile these two things, right? Like, you cannot have a church building and staff and the expectation that all the money given goes to the poor. Like, that's just the
yeah.
reality.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not possible.
Yeah.
And so, like, again, I think there's things that we can kind of learn, but...
Right.
That this would be the reality,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I think like looking, being a community resource can look different ways, and I think it
yeah.
probably looks differently now than it did 2,000 years ago.
Sure.
But yeah, there's things I appreciate about the way that like our church, for instance, is a resource for our community,
mm-hmm.
and also we have things like the pastor's discretionary fund, which is set up specifically to help people who are struggling, whatever that looks like. You
provide
know?
Emergency assistance. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Absolutely. And I think, that's one of the things that I think we're doing well is
yeah.
our building is a tool for the community, not just holy ground for worship.
But right. Yeah.
From Boy Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, AA meetings. I think we have community groups constantly using and at a pretty reduced rate, if we're being honest.
Like
versus other halls that they could be renting.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, number three. How we think about power.
Ooh.
Probably. I haven't thought a whole lot about how the early church thinks about it. I mean, I will say the early church definitely is not running for office because that was not like
an
option,
thing.
Right? Yeah. So they, no one was like trying to elect Paul emperor. That was not.
Nobody's like, I want to be Caesar when I grow up.
Yeah.
and amazingly, he's not talking about political power. He's actually talking about militarism.
Oh.
I think that this little heading.
I would say some branches of the church do think about militarism.
Well, today.
So the early church would be very pacifistic, not passive, P-A-C-I-F, pacifistic, right? In that they're against violence, right? Against
pacifists.
Pacifists, not pacifist. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll use his words.
If you use P-A-S-S, it's like, I'm not doing anything. P-A-C-I-F is I'm actively not engaging it, right? It's so I'm making a big deal out of trying to emphasize a small thing.
Word does he use?
Militarism.
I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. All right,
militarism refers to the belief or desire that a country should maintain a strong military capacity and be prepared to use it aggressively to defend or promote national interests.
I've never heard that here.
I would say both political parties support most of that statement. They would have different understandings of how it should operate, but both would agree.
Political parties, not the church.
I understand. So, I'm just establishing that, this is
when you look at the national budget, the military.
Yep.
is quite a large part of that budget.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and there's no doubt about it. Here, this is his words again. Militarism profoundly shapes American values. Again,
yes.
Both parties.
It's a reality of the world of the country we live in.
And if anybody, and if any political party or political figure says we need to reduce the amount that we spend on our military,
voted out.
What?
They're against the troops.
Even though we do very little for our veterans, they're against the troops. Mm-hmm. We're saying we should spend less on our military.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Evidently. Yeah. All right. But also shapes Christian values. Here, this is his words again. Military historian Andrew Bosovich has unearthed the roots of American militarism and discovered that the man behind the curtain has none other than the evangelical church. And after much research, basically concludes, were it not for the support offered by several tens of millions of evangelicals, militarism in this deeply and genuinely religious country becomes inconceivable. I feel like he's got a major issue here that he's trying to sum up in two paragraphs.
Love it.
And I think Mr. Sprinkle. Mr. Pomeranian Sprinkle.
Mr. Sprinkle's take on the military. Right. Yeah.
You could have done a better job with this one. This is one that, this is its own topic. And I think you need to kind of get more in this. But I think what he is going to kind of ultimately kind of point to, it's the kind of a Christian church saying, we can't really love all our enemies.
Yeah.
And the world outside is a threat.
And where that comes from is once the Christian church becomes the empirical power, right? Like once we are now an empire that has to defend itself against enemies, we're no longer the ones who are trying to follow Jesus within a culture that is against us, right? And so I think, our modern militarism is based on Constantine and Crusades and other aspects of, defending the church against its enemies who are out to get it. Mm-hmm. And the early church did not have a sense of we have to defend the church against our enemies. The early church's sense was Jesus is defending us against whatever we need, and so we just need to follow Jesus.
Right.
And,
for sure. Yeah.
That means we're going to let ourselves be martyred rather than raise up an army and try to resist something, right?
Yeah, that we don't need a church body ready to aggressively defend or act in its interests.
Yes.
In its community, yeah. That whether that's we got to go down to City Hall and make sure that they don't put in this thing next to the church that's going to take away some of our parking that we use.
Yeah.
Or sometimes
I will say if they tried to take away some of our parking, I'd have a very big problem with that.
Sure. Well, we already have no parking.
I know. It's really, why are you taking more? Come on. Yeah. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that this is not the role of the church. Agreed. For the early church, is not to aggressively defend or promote its own values.
Yeah, you know, I hear that.
That was just not a thing. All right, and then finally.
But yeah, it does need more time than Mr. Sprinkle was giving it there.
Yeah. How we study the Bible. Number four.
How we study the Bible?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, particularly with the New Testament letters, I guess I would have mixed reactions to this, because my sense is that the early church did not spend a whole lot of time studying the Old Testament. I mean, they kind of used the Old Testament to understand who Jesus was, but the church was not on like a week-to-week basis really investing in studying the Old Testament anymore, particularly as it became less Jewish and more...
Gentile.
Yeah, Gentile. Thank you. I was going to say more Christian, but I was like, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Less Jewish, more Gentile. So there's that. The thing that I think is really interesting is that when they were receiving letters, you know, from Paul, or when a gospel was being proclaimed, they were often like read and told in their entirety, right? And so you would come and you would be at worship, and the letter from Paul would be read, and you would hear the whole thing. And I think that reading things in their entirety would benefit us in a very meaningful way, versus here's these five verses, and we're not going to. And like certainly as a preacher, we try to put those things in context, but you know, there's limited context that you can do without. Yeah. Seeing the whole story and seeing how the whole thing works together and weaves throughout. And, you know, the letters are actually way more interesting when you read them as whole stories, because Paul has relationships with most of these communities and is basing the stuff that he's saying off of those relationships.
Well, I mean, a lot of places in American Christianity, when it comes to like their preaching time or their teaching time in corporate worship, start with like theme.
Yeah.
And then let's jump around to a bunch of verses and a bunch of sentences that support that theme.
Yes.
Or that we're utilizing to kind of teach that theme.
Yes.
And that is a terrible way to teach the Bible.
That's like, called proof texting. That is called, I have something I want to say, and I'm going to read the Bible to find things that agree with me.
It's just
backwards.
Yeah. Choosing, here's a verse out of context, far greater. And I think churches now... Thankfully, many of them are kind of realizing this, and I think the Lutheran Church, we teach from the lectionary often, so is when you kind of open up and read a passage and you're teaching from that passage together has far more value of letting this kind of lead the discussion or lead that conversation.
Yeah.
And I think the greatest version of that would be you're also teaching the context of what's there, and it's in relation to this passage leads to the next one, which leads to the next one, which leads to the next one. You know, like, so you're kind of walking through a larger section together that you can't possibly get through all at once. That would be the best version of that. But jumping around verse to verse, here's one verse from Romans, here's one verse from Habakkuk, that's crazy town. Like, that's not going to actually teach you what the Bible actually says or how it communicates.
But both of those verses are going to talk about the righteousness of God. So that's good.
Yeah, that's true. Like, it's not an impossibility, but you're not going to be very biblically literate by doing that as kind of your worship stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there are challenges to the lectionary too. We'll just honor that, right? But
for sure.
But yes, that you get a fuller picture when you're reading those passages. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, I think that this is one of those that he doesn't really quite even go into, like how we study the Bible. Well, the others doesn't even have a Bible.
Right.
Right.
They have the Jewish scriptures, and they have letters, and eventually they have these copies of the gospel that were maybe being passed around to certain churches. Like, you know, the church in Corinth maybe had a gospel of Mark. The church in Athens maybe didn't, right? Like, you know, everybody had, you know, different things that they were reading from.
I wonder sometimes what it would have been like to have been born into a generation that does not have thousands of years of baggage behind the text.
So
that
to
we
be
have.
Adam and Eve?
Well, no, but I mean, like the early church, right? Like they don't have, they're not approaching this with the idea of this has been figured out. Like this theologically has been nailed down for 2,000 years. You know, it's, even though it hasn't, but you know, like the idea that this is already ancient, right? Like it's all kind of brand new, and they're figuring it out as they go. Like that's pretty interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge for the early church, right, was that the Jewish scriptures were that, right? Those were still thousands of years old and in some ways ancient and sacred and all of those, and had been figured out. And so they were reading all of those scriptures in a new way, and that was transforming the culture that they lived in. Yeah.
I also think sometimes we're like romanticizing the past on things like this.
Sure.
You know, like they all were like living out the word of Jesus. Like, were they? I mean, I mean, come on. Like obviously they did, like the early church did some incredible things, but that doesn't mean like every person who's part of that early church is all that much different than Christians of today, who are like coming there, finding meaning, but also just living their lives. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, yeah. like that's, you know, kind of the reality. Like, people are people. And yes. like, the yeah. other church was not different.
People gonna people.
By being people. All right. Well, are there any other, he listed four. Are there any things, you know, we, and we're just kind of going off the cuff here, that maybe yeah. like, that was great for the other church. Probably not for us.
Is there anything like, probably not for us.
Yeah, that we can kind of think through.
I mean, early church, mixed bag for women and for minorities. And, yeah. and so yeah. I think, you know, I think, and you've mentioned this before, right, that Paul and others had a fairly progressive understanding of what that was like, but I think that we have continued to stretch past that, and I think that's an appropriate reflection of the kingdom mm-hmm. of God, right? Yeah. And so yeah. I think that's probably good for us not to go backwards in that sense by any means. I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this.
There's still kind of a lot of archaic ideas about, like, you know, like corporal punishment and that kind of thing, like cause and effect. I think mm-hmm. that we're just so like entrenched in like that time, right? Like it just yeah. tends to be a more physically violent time in history, and I think that we have moved largely past that, and that's yeah. net positive.
Yeah,
I do think we should spend more time considering the role of being in people's homes with one another.
Agreed.
I think that is yeah. a really meaningful thing that was the only way of existing for the early church, and that we have forgotten.
Right.
And so we gather in this kind of neutral corporate space, but we don't let one another into our lives.
Right.
And what would yeah. it mean for us to do that in a meaningful way?
I'm 100% with you on that. I think that is something that's a tremendous value that the early church has. That all these other things are kind of details in my mind, mm-hmm. but I think that is, like, to quote like a cheap evangelical catchphrase, that's life together.
Ooh.
You know, like you know, like I think that is, you know, an important factor. And they didn't go to, you know, that room wasn't filled with thousands of people and then let's get in our small groups, everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it just is a small group. Like, that's just what it is. And they're just figuring it all out. And so I think there could be some tremendous value there. You know, I think through, like, the early church kind of was motivated by this idea that, like, Jesus is coming back in their lifetime.
Yeah, sure.
And so, like, saving all my possessions
doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like, we don't need to pass on anything to my grandkids or anything like that, because Jesus come back. So I mean, like, that one was a powerful motivator. Like, they were like, you know, especially for Paul and some of the other like key figures, of like, every day has to be dedicated to church stuff, because
yeah.
it might be the last day dedicated to church stuff. And even though Christians out there are convinced that we're living in the end times, they're not motivated the same way the early church
was.
No,
they're not. Yeah.
To give to their neighbors and to take care of the poor, and they're more motivated to, I don't know,
build generational wealth.
Build a bomb shelter,
right.
and yeah. yell about liberals in society is really sure. what happens. Yeah.
yeah.
I also think, you know, like, how they did communion and things like that is, you know, pretty weird. You know, like,
yeah.
people are getting drunk. You know, like, that's not a possibility.
Well, Paul did say that was not good. That yeah. was not how we should do it.
yeah. But, like, it was happening. Like, it was a possibility.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's true. Is like, their communion was more of a meal
yeah.
and less of a kind of a, some, you know, ours is not a meal. That, you know, as great as that little morsel of bread is, and it's good bread.
Yeah,
I would like more of it. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
yeah.
barely a snack. I'm with you. Yeah,
yeah. You know, so I think that's kind of interesting. You know, like, that's an interesting way to do communion mm-hmm. that we just don't really do, even in kind of our smaller groups. Or maybe we could explore that differently. Of like, communion will be a meal. We're going to eat bread and together as we kind of talk and converse as we do like a normal meal. I think it would be an interesting practice, but it's not one that we practice.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Well, and part of that is the professionalization of clergy, right?
For sure.
And so, you know, we would no longer say like, hey, you're gathering in someone's home, whoever's there, lead communion, right? We would say, oh, the pastor's got to come and lead communion. And
yeah.
there's positives and negatives to that. That's a whole 100%. Other podcast,
yeah.
to be sure.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. And I'm sure we've done it in the past.
Yeah. I'm sure I've said it. I don't know.
yeah. I agree. Positives
and
negatives.
I am pro-pastor. Just to be clear.
Are you?
I'm saying, what about AI pastor?
yeah. Nope. We've definitely
have
done that one.
We have talked
about
this.
And
yeah.
I'm anti
that. He got defrocked.
He did. He had to get defrocked.
Yeah. He's Catholic, though, you know? So.
Yeah. So he's now just like a deacon or something.
it's because he was doing the Kool-Aid baptisms, right?
<'Cause>
you could baptize in Gatorade.
That was amazing.
All right.
Is that the question the Catholics are like really wrestling over?
Yeah,
like
who
we've
that?
Got everything yeah. else figured out. What about the Gatorade baptism?
Right.
Let's get AI's take.
What about Mountain Dew? An extreme baptism?
yeah.
yeah. Well, is that it from Mr. Sprinkle?
I'm sure he's got more, but that's in this article.
I'm going to need you to find more articles from Mr. Sprinkle. I think that's wonderful, just so we can come back to that.
This is, yeah.
Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode and there's some cultural event happening in the world, we'd love to hear about it. So you should send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com and let us know what's happening when this episode is released.
I'm snuggling a cute baby right now.
Aww. So.
Yeah.
Or it's screaming and I'm like...
Or you're sleep deprived.
That seems more practical, yeah.
Both those things would be true at once.
Yeah, simultaneously. Yeah. But hey, you can find all our episodes, past, present, and future, beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.